out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Out of School, a program that focuses on issues affecting public schools here in New York City, the greater metropolitan area, and the nation. My name is Carol Burris, and I'm the Executive Director of Network for Public Education. We're a nonprofit organization that supports true public schools governed by communities, because we believe public education is the heart of our democracy. You can find us at www.networkforpubliceducation.org. Now, for the next hour, we're going to focus on one of the greatest threats to public education, and that is voucher programs. These are programs, often with very deceptive names, that give taxpayer money directly or indirectly to private schools. A new study from the National Center for Educational Statistics entitled School Choice in America 2019 tells us that in 2016, 9% of students attended private schools. That new study also tells us private school students are whiter and wealthier than public school students. And it tells us that 76% of all private schools are religious schools. Greatest share are Catholic parochial schools, but their number is dropping, and enrollment in conservative Christian schools is on the rise. And I'm not talking out of school when I tell you what you already know. The biggest fan of private religious schools and voucher programs is our Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos. Now, my two guests today are not fans of voucher programs, and they are going to tell you about a new organization that they are leading called Public Funds, Public Schools. They are Catherine Dunn of the Southern Poverty Law Center and Jessica Levin of the Education Law Center, based right here in New Jersey. Catherine is the Regional Policy Analyst for Children's Rights at the Southern Poverty Law Center. Previously, she served as general attorney at the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights in Atlanta, Georgia. Prior to that, she was a program director at the Southern Education Foundation, where her work to promote equity in public education occurred across the American South. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the Southern Poverty Law Center, it is a nonprofit civil rights organization dedicated to fighting hate and bigotry and to seeking justice for the most vulnerable members of society. Catherine is joined by Jessica Levin. Jessica Levin is senior attorney at Education Law Center, right here in New Jersey. The Education Law Center fights for equal educational opportunity and education justice in both New Jersey as well as the nation. As director of the Public Funds, Public Schools campaign, Jessica now focuses on litigation and advocacy to oppose private school voucher programs and keep public funds where they belong, in public schools. Welcome, Jessica and Catherine. Thank you both for joining us. Are you there? Good morning.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. Thank you very much for having us on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. We're so happy to have you. Now, before we get started, I want to remind our listeners, this is Talk Out of School on WBAI 99.5 FM, and that we want you to enter the dialogue on this important topic. So please call in at the break. The number for that is 212-209-2877. So, Jessica, one of the things that I've learned about vouchers is that there is a wide variety of programs that either are often intended to get around state constitutions, and in my opinion, are set up in ways to hide their intent from the public. If you could tell our listeners what a voucher is, and then describe the different forms that they take.
Yes, and thank you again for the opportunity to come on your show and talk about this very important issue in public education right now. So private school voucher programs redirect public money to pay for private education. And as you mentioned, there are many different variations of these programs, and they're constantly evolving, as you said, sometimes to try to avoid legal challenges or to avoid negative public associations with the word voucher or previous voucher programs. So let me briefly explain a few different types of vouchers that listeners can look out for. First, traditional private school vouchers, which pay for all or part of a student's private school tuition with direct payments from the public treasury. And states can impose various eligibility requirements or limits on voucher amounts. They vary from state to state, but that's the traditional private school voucher for private school tuition. Another type of voucher is called an education savings account voucher, or an ESA. And these are public funds. It's often a percentage of the amount provided by the state to a public school for each student. And that money then is deposited into a personal account, like a debit account, that can be used to pay for a student's private school tuition, but also a broader range of education expenses, like tutoring, online coursework, transportation, or even homeschooling in some ESA programs. A third type of voucher that's very important to mention is called a tax credit voucher. And these are yet another type of voucher program, but they have a bit of a different structure. And more than a third of states provide individuals or corporations with up to 100% dollar-for-dollar credit to send the money that they would otherwise owe in taxes to private organizations. And then those private organizations in turn, which can be called scholarship granting organizations or SGOs, they fund private school vouchers. And the last type that I want to mention, this is a newer type of voucher structure, is the push to expand the use of 529 accounts. You may remember these from, they're traditionally meant to save for college, but now there is a push at the federal level and in the states to be able to use 529 accounts again for K-12 private education expenses.
Thank you.
And these programs they're often targeted to a specific student population, mm-hmm. such as students with disabilities, and then expanded. But the bottom line is that all of these types of voucher programs divert scarce public resources away from public schools.
You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit too, Jessica, about the tax credit programs, because as I understand it, in some states you can even take that as a deduction on your state taxes and then take it as a deduction possibly again on your federal taxes, so that people are making money off some of these voucher tax credits. Is that true?
That has been an issue for tax credit vouchers. That's been one of many issues. And I think another important thing to note, and you're getting at this, is that these are credits, and often up to 100% credit. So the money that 100% of the money that would have gone into the public funds to be used for things like public schools is not then going into the public, it's then being diverted to private schools.
That's amazing. So it's like, it's not really charitable giving, because everything you give, you get back. That's remarkable.
That's right. And that's a point, exactly. And that's a point that some lawmakers are making about federal proposals for a tax credit scheme as well.
So you know, Catherine, well, what's so bad about this, right? So I'm a parent who's sending my child to parochial schools, and I'm paying my taxes. Why is this a problem, and why should our listeners care?
Yeah, good morning, Carol. Thanks so much for having us. I mean, there's a lot to say about why private school vouchers are bad. I think, you know, the reason that we are doing this work to fight private school vouchers really comes from a belief around what you noted at the beginning of the show, which is that we believe that healthy public schools are really critical to our democracy. And as Jessica noted, these voucher programs divert more and more scarce resources away from public schools. And so we're doing this because we believe that every child in this country should have access to a thriving public school. And we know that the public believes in this too. So opinion polling consistently shows that the public believes in their local public schools, and that when there's a choice between diverting tax dollars, public funds, to voucher programs or resourcing public schools, people consistently choose resourcing public schools. So Florida is one of the states where the Southern Poverty Law Center does its children's rights work. And each year we see $1 billion being diverted from the state treasury to private school voucher programs. And Florida's public schools rank 41st in the country in funding fairness. And so you see the effects over time in a state where vouchers have existed for several decades, and what that has done to public schools in that state. So that's really the core reason that we're doing this work. But we also know that private school voucher programs just don't work for the kids that do attend private schools on vouchers. Research continues to show a range of negative impacts, including that students using vouchers fare worse academically than students in public schools. That vouchers also increase segregation, particularly racial segregation, and that these programs really lack academic standards and accountability, and they erode the separation of church and state. Also important to our work is the fact that vouchers negatively affect students' civil rights. So when a student gets a voucher to attend a private school, for example, students of disabilities lose important federal protections. Actually, 12 states have programs that are targeted for students with disabilities. But those students actually do lose some important protections when they go from a public school to a private school. No state actually provides protections for LGBT students. And then we see discriminatory impacts for students of color, for example. And as these students lose protections in getting pushed out of school, getting pushed out of private schools for disciplinary reasons or other reasons. And then you see differences in some very basic regulations. So, for example, in Florida, private schools don't even have to meet the same building code standards as public schools, many of which in Florida have to be resistant to hurricanes and storms. And so these are some of the reasons that vouchers have been shown to not work. But again, really, we're coming from this from a belief that our resources should go to make sure every child can attend a thriving public school.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about kids losing their rights. I remember when I did some research on the state of Indiana. There was a school there, was a private school, a religious school, that if your parents were gay, or a lesbian, that you could be excluded from that school, that they would throw kids out. And it's really very frightening to think that our federal tax dollars and state tax dollars are going toward these kinds of programs, because all of us are paying for the Washington, D.C. voucher program through our federal tax dollars. And how many states, if I could go back to you, Jessica, how many states actually have voucher programs? And do they have more than one program going, or just one?
Great question. It depends a little bit on how you count, but about 30 states have some type of voucher program, whether that's a traditional program, an ESA program, or a tax credit voucher, like we just talked about. And several states have more than one voucher program. That's an illustration of what I mentioned before, that often a state will begin with one small program and then expands. And Florida, for example, is one good illustration of a state with several voucher programs that are profoundly draining resources from the public schools. So Florida has two vouchers for students with disabilities. It has a tax credit program. It has a program for students who say that they were bullied or harassed in school. And just this year, the Florida legislature passed yet another voucher program that uses more of the traditional voucher structure that we discussed to funnel even more money away from public schools. So Florida is sort of a microcosm of all of these different types of harmful voucher programs. But it is worth noting that although dozens of state legislatures take up voucher bills each year, and there were dozens and dozens of voucher bills across the United States this past legislative session in 2019, the vast majority did not pass. And that's due to dedicated, vigorous advocacy from those who are spreading the word about the harmful effects of these programs.
Well, that's, you know, at least there's a little bit of optimism there. I know at the Network for Public Education, we try to be very, very vigilant. And whenever we see a proposal coming up in a state legislature, we immediately notify our followers. We're over about 350,000 at this point, and we send out those emails and get people engaged with their legislature. But, you know, it's odd, and if I could stick with you for just one second, Jessica, one of the things I notice is how similar all of the different legislation seems. Is there any, you know, you don't want to sound like a paranoid, but is there any kind of a plot behind the scenes where people are pumping this legislation out?
There certainly are several well-funded organizations like the Institute for Justice or ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that promote voucher programs, and they go state by state promoting these programs, and that can be one of the reasons that vouchers will spread, a certain type of voucher program will spread from one state to the next. And I'll give you an example that is a newer example of a type of voucher program. I just mentioned that Florida has a bullying voucher, a voucher for students who say that they were bullied or harassed and want to take a voucher to go to a private school. And Florida was the first state to pass that type of voucher. And now that iteration of vouchers has been proposed in many other states. And there are people working to try to get a bullying voucher passed in a number of different states. And that carries a lot of problems, including that a student may have been bullied, for example, for their LGBT status or for having a disability in the public school. And as Catherine mentioned, students lose a lot of their protections under the law when they move to a private school. So for many reasons, that is not a solution to bullying in school. But that's one example of a type of voucher that has been a proposal that has proliferated across the state.
Thank you. You know, Catherine, I want to go back to something you said earlier. And you said the research tells us that vouchers don't work, right? Because what we hear from Betsy DeVos and from others is that there should be all of this choice and that public schools are failing. And if only kids were able to attend private schools, they would do very well. But you implied that that's not exactly what we've been seeing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, not all voucher programs have academic accountability components, which is by design. In the states that do, though, the data shows that students do not perform better than their public school counterparts. So we've seen data come out of voucher programs in Indiana, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Louisiana, and D.C. That, you know, is all consistent with this finding that private school vouchers don't improve students' academic outcomes. And most recently this year, a study came out of the University of Arkansas on Louisiana's voucher program. And, you know, one of the responses to the studies coming out of the states and cities that I just mentioned is that voucher proponents will often say, well, you know, this is a one point in time, and private school voucher students need more time to improve their test scores, for example. But this study actually showed that after 4 years following students over that period of time, students using vouchers to attend private schools actually performed noticeably worse on state assessments than their public school counterparts and showed large negative effects, especially in math. And so this study really refuted those claims that voucher students just need more time. I mean, that's a student's entire high school career. And so I think we're seeing, as voucher programs, are in place for longer, we're seeing these claims only grow, or this research only grow stronger, that voucher programs just don't work.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up. The study that I talked to at the top of the hour, and it's a teeny bit off topic, was about charter schools and what they're finding too. Long-term research, kids don't do any better than they do in the public schools. But all of these programs and privatization were put in place to try to convince the public that public schools are failing and therefore we need these alternatives. And I've noticed a shift in the conversation with voucher proponents. They're not talking about academic outcomes anymore. They're talking about things like parental satisfaction and, you know, so they're almost trying to come up with a rationale for the programs that that never existed when that push began. And now, you know, as I understand it also, Jessica, you don't have to worry about and track vouchers at the state level, but that there are some worries at the national level. And part of the worries and the increased worry around it is because of the positions of the present Secretary of Education. So I'm wondering if you would share with our listeners what it is that Betsy DeVos has to say when it comes to voucher programs.
Yes, this is important to note because even though a lot of the action that we're watching on vouchers is at the state level, what's being said at the federal level absolutely is very important. And as you said, Secretary DeVos is a longtime proponent of vouchers and school privatization generally. And now during her time as Secretary of Education, there have been several proposals for voucher programs at the federal level. For example, right now, there's a proposal in both houses of Congress to pass what's called the Education Freedom Scholarships and Opportunity Act. And this is a $5 billion tax credit voucher program. So that, as we talked about before, is a program where people get tax credits to donate to a scholarship granting organization that then gives private school vouchers. And there have also been other proposals, like for education savings account vouchers for children of military families and many different voucher bills at the federal level. Currently, the only federal voucher program is the one in Washington, D.C. that you were talking about. And as you said, research has shown that program doesn't improve student achievement or other measures like parental satisfaction. But there is still a push among voucher proponents at the federal level to pass even more voucher programs despite that evidence. The good news is there doesn't appear to be an appetite for vouchers at the federal level because there is an absence of Democratic support. There's also an absence of support among some Republicans as well. That combined with the unpopularity of Secretary DeVos and the visible support for public education that Catherine was mentioning, and things like teacher strikes supporting public education, mean that there isn't an appetite at the federal level, but it's still very concerning that federal lawmakers and those in the federal government continue to push voucher programs when they've been shown to be an ineffective and a harmful use of public funds.
Yeah, I mean, it is very frightening. You know, you mentioned the name of the newest proposal, and when you listen to the name, scholarship program, right? So what do we think of when we think of a scholarship program? We're thinking of hardworking kids who get great grades and therefore get a scholarship to attend perhaps a private school or college. But, you know, this isn't what this is about at all. And education savings accounts that you mentioned did some research in the state of Arizona, and there's a lot of fraud that was associated with it, where parents were getting essentially a debit card and things would happen. They would buy materials that were educational materials, then return them, then get a gift card, then go in and buy something else. And it's it seems as though it's so out of control, but there's almost you get this feeling of real hostility toward public education and seeing all of these other programs as an alternative. If we
one other thing about the name Education Freedom Scholarship is, you know, private school voucher programs have a troubling history in this country. The first kind of iterations were used as a tool to resist segregation after the Brown versus Board decision, and were set up really as white academies. And so the language of segregationists used around that time was around freedom of choice. So you heard George Wallace and other segregationists use this freedom language, and we're now seeing that same language resurface with this administration's push and interest in private school voucher programs.
Yeah, I think that's that's such an important point to add, because there is a history of the segregation academies in the South, and that's where we saw all of this before. And it's almost, when I listen to some of the rhetoric around it, is they're trying to morph the definition of public education. The traditional definition of public education, right, was schools that any child could attend, that were supported by the public and governed by the public. And every time it seems as though the definition is changing. So the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian think tank that very much supports all of these programs, started to put forth on Twitter just a couple of days ago this idea that, well, if public funds go toward it, that means that it's a public school, which is very, very different. So, I think there's a realization on some level that the public really wants a public school system. They want a better public school system, we all do, but they really do believe in public schools. So wrapping the word public around all of this and words like scholarships really is a way, I believe, to trick the public. And it's become sort of this, this drip, drip, drip over many, many years, beginning with Milton Friedman. And then I guess, as you said, even before that, we're going to be taking a break now for just a few moments. I want to remind our listeners that we're listening to Talk Out of School on WBAI-FM with two terrific guests, Catherine Dunn and Jessica Levin. And they will be returning to us right after the break.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
Hi, this is Joe Strummer, and you're listening to WBAI, and it's all mixed up, and it's mixed in, too.
Okay.
Listeners, listen up. The Community Advisory Board, or the CAB, is a group of listeners who meet every Sunday to help WBAI. Our station needs actual work done, hands and bodies, at the WBAI office in Brooklyn, New York. Now is the time to move from listening to action. Come and do some work. We need to pack and mail premiums, call listeners to solve premium problems, complete inventorying, and send out BAI buddy packs. Commit to 12 hours a week or whatever you can. You can show up from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. WBAI's heart and soul is the listener. So bring your body, heart, and soul to 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, you can send an email to volunteer@wbai.org.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Carol Burris, and our show is Talk Out of School, right here on WBAI-FM at 99.5. With me today are Catherine Dunn of the Southern Poverty Law Center and Jessica Levin of the Education Law Center, and we are talking out of school about Betsy DeVos, vouchers, and school privatization. Now, you can enter the dialogue with your questions and comments by calling us at 212-209-2877. I would also like to remind you that WBAI is a listener-supported station, and to stay on the air, we need your help. Don't forget to sign up online as a BAI buddy for Talk Out of School. So, welcome back, Jessica and Catherine. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Good. All right, so now that we have established that vouchers are a real threat to public education and its ideals, can you let us know a little bit about public funds for public schools and what that organization is going to do to combat them?
Absolutely. We're really excited to talk to you and your listeners today about public funds, public schools. Public funds, public schools, or PSPS, it's a national campaign to ensure, as the name implies, that all public funds for education are used to support our public schools. And this campaign is a collaboration of the Education Law Center, where Jessica works, and my organization, the Southern Poverty Law Center, as well as our SPLC Action Fund, and the law firm Munger, Tolles, and Olson. And we launched this campaign, as I said earlier in your show, because we operate with the core belief that healthy public schools are essential to our democracy and that every child should have access to a thriving public school. And because public schools are open to all students, they must comply with state and federal laws that protect students' civil rights and their educational opportunities. And chronic underfunding across the country of public schools has meant that, you know, public schools can't adequately fill this role. And so we are fighting to ensure that public funds stay in public schools. We are using a range of tools to protect and promote public education. Litigation is a crucial tool that we're using, and an example of how we've used litigation before, and some of the origins of this campaign go back to 2016, when Jessica's organization, the Education Law Center, helped represent public school parents challenging a new, very broad voucher program in Nevada based on violations of the state constitution with Munger, Tolles, and Olson. And the result was a permanent injunction of the program by the state Supreme Court. And so that really was the origin of what became this public funds, public schools campaign, and litigation is a key part of our work. We also are working to monitor legislative developments across the state, analyze voucher proposals, and assist groups working across the country to fight private school vouchers. We're also working across research. So we know that some of the research that I, you know, highlighted earlier, particularly around academic outcomes, this research is really critical to being able to study and understand the effects of vouchers. And so we are working to amplify this research and make use of data and research in our litigation and advocacy efforts. We're also working around communications. So we know that communications are key to this fight against vouchers and persuading policymakers, informing parents. As I mentioned earlier, parents are not always told about rights that they might lose for their children when attending a private school on a voucher. So, and informing the public and making sure that advocates are connected with each other and have the tools and information they need to be effective. And so our campaign really focuses on those four strategies, litigation, advocacy, research, and communication.
And have you seen these strategies working before?
Yes, we have. And we are thrilled to be working together now to increase our efforts in this area and also to support other wonderful organizations that are fighting vouchers and have been working either with litigation or with legislative advocacy. But we aim to really increase the resources and effort that are going into this extremely important fight. So I can give you a couple just of examples of when these strategies have been successful in the past. The first, as Catherine mentioned, is litigation. fighting vouchers in the courts is not the right strategy all the time, but it can be a very important and effective strategy to demonstrate to the courts that voucher programs are illegal, and they can be illegal for many reasons. And the Nevada case that Catherine mentioned is one great example. So in 2015, the Nevada legislature passed, as Catherine said, a very broad ESA voucher program, and it would have diverted huge amounts of public education resources, because the way that the ESA vouchers were funded was to divert per pupil funds that had been provided by the legislature for the public schools instead into ESA accounts to be used on private education expenses. So parents of public education students sued over this program, and they based the lawsuit on the Nevada Constitution, which prohibits taxpayer funds that are provided by the legislature for the operation of the public schools from being used for any other purpose. And so the parents explained that the voucher program violated this constitutional ban by diverting the funding that was necessary to educate their children in the public schools instead to private schools. And as Catherine said, the parents won that case. They were represented by Education Law Center and Munger, Tolles, and Olson and others. And we were able to convince the Nevada Supreme Court of that constitutional violation. And the Supreme Court ruled that the program was unconstitutional, that it violated that prohibition on using public education funds for anything else, and it permanently stopped the program. And there have been other court victories in other states demonstrating that voucher programs violate the state constitution. Perhaps the program violates the education clause of the constitution, which guarantees public education to students in that state. Or it might violate a state constitutional prohibition on funding of private schools or religious schools or institutions. Also, as Catherine mentioned, vouchers pose significant problems for student civil rights. So there are many ways that voucher right. programs, as I said, might be illegal. And so these strategies have been successful, but fighting these programs in the state legislature is also extremely important and can be very effective. Just for example, this year in West Virginia and Kentucky, public school teacher demonstrations had a large part in defeating voucher legislation there. And in Arizona, grassroots groups like Save Our Schools Arizona have built on momentum in favor of public schools and against diverting money from those public schools to defeat voucher proposals in the legislature. So multifaceted advocacy is very important.
Thank you. Now, before I open up the line to callers, I'm wondering if one of you can give us a bit more information about your organization, what the website is, and how folks that are listening today can get informed and also get involved.
Yes, absolutely. We just officially launched this campaign about a month ago, and we have a brand new website that we're excited to share with everyone. It is PSPS, so that's for public funds, public schools, .org. And we would absolutely love for you to check out the website. We've got a lot of great resources around some of the research we've been citing today on this call, and then some examples of advocacy and litigation. And if you go to the contact section of our page, you can sign up for our emails so you can stay up to date on the work that PSPS is engaged in. And we'd love for you to use that forum to tell us a little bit about you and the work that you're doing or your interest in vouchers and, you know, where it is that you are, you know, across the country so that we can, you know, stay in touch with you as this issue might pop up in your community. But we'd love for you to be in touch, you know, as you see voucher bills in your state come up, if you have questions about, you know, tools or information that would be useful to your fight for public schools in your city or state. We'd love to speak with you or to hear from you. Jessica, anything that you would add?
No, I would just say that we're very excited about the website, and we hope you will sign up and then be getting our blast, where we often also blast out resources and webinars and other tools for those who are advocating for public schools.
Thank you. Now, I want to give that number out just one more time. It's 212-209-2877. If you'd like to call, that's 212-209-2877. I believe we have a caller.
Yes, ma'am.
Before you begin with your question, I want to tell you you're on the air, and I'd like to ask you your name and where you are calling from.
I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. My name is Al.
Hi, Al. What's your question?
Listen, I would like to know, you know, years ago they had the state lottery, New York State Lottery, and they always publicized the fact that the New York State Lottery was going to help finance the school system of New York City and the state. And it's kind of ironic that the state has never gave any kind of report on the monies, where the money's going to, how it was distributed between the state and the Board of Education.
Right.
I was wondering, is there any kind of information on that?
You know,
and why that the state lottery has been bulging at the seams.
It's, you know,
names are coming up, and there's no accountability for whatever assets, monies that they made.
I hear you, and I hear your point. I don't have an answer to that question. I would suggest that you contact your local congressperson, but I really would like to move on, if we could, to see if we have another caller and see if we have some questions on topic. Hi there, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello.
Hello, my name is Reverend Diane Doherty. I'm glad to be on the air. I'm a member of the Georgia Coalition for Public Education. Catherine Dunn, excellent job. And I follow you very much, so I have a brief question. My question has to do with working at the lowest level of people who are kind of hijacked in their thinking. And how do we attack the, or what are some good suggestions to attack the charter schools, private schools, our public schools line? And I just need a defense for that, because you always get stuck with just saying, no, they're not. Thank you so much.
Okay. Catherine, do you have a response to that? I'm not sure I understood the question, but maybe you have some insight.
Hi, Reverend Doherty. I think the question was, how do we really fight back as just people in these states who are facing private school vouchers? What are the tools needed to really communicate their negative effects? Is that correct?
She hung up, Catherine. So
she hung up. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think, well, I think that was the question. And sorry, the volume was a little low on my end. But, you know, I think there really isn't a bunch of momentum from the public for these voucher programs. A lot of the reason that they're, when they do pass, as Jessica mentioned earlier in the show, doesn't get introduced, that don't move, you know, even out of committee, or don't ultimately become law. And in those states that do pass, I think that it's we see some of the organizations that Jessica mentioned earlier really using their money and power to influence policymakers to pass these programs. And so I think the work is in really organizing the public to hold their elected officials accountable for the decisions that they're making that affect public schools. And so I think the work is really in framing this as a public school problem, which it is, and that affects all of us. If we're diverting, like I mentioned in Florida, $1 billion every year and growing to private school vouchers, that affects all Floridians. And so I think the work is in engaging folks to follow the decisions that their lawmakers are making and to call them and let them know that, you know, we want these public funds to go to our public schools. And in terms of research on these programs not working, I do hope that listeners will check out PSPS.org. We'll be building out additional materials that I think help communicate the research available on our website. But we do have a lot of information there about why private school vouchers don't work.
You know, it's interesting, too. The person who called in introduced herself as Reverend, and there are a lot of pastors and preachers and others who really are against the voucher program. Some of the strongest folks who are standing up for public schools are groups like Pastors for Texas Children and Pastors for Oklahoma Children. So it's really good to have so many allies. We do have another caller. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions.
What's your name, please?
Jean.
Hi, Jean. Where are you calling from?
Manhattan.
Nice to speak with you. Go ahead.
Thank you. The call letters of your organization, can you give, like, say, Tifa Thomas, because I'm just not getting that website, and I do have a hearing problem. And my other question is, this over $1 billion lawsuit that was won for education, can you tell me where that is right now and why, you know, that money hasn't been, you know, given to public education since the lawsuit was won?
Sure. Okay. So first, this is Jessica, and I want to make sure that we say the website clearly for you and everybody else who might want to go on. So the website is www.psps. So that's P for Patrick.
Okay, P for Patrick, uh-huh.
F for Frank.
F for Frank.
P for Patrick. Again.
P for Patrick.
Uh-huh, and S for Sarah.
S for Sarah.
It's the first letter of every word, so public funds, public schools, PSPS.org, so .org.
Okay, thank you so much.
If you go to the contact page, you can put in a little bit of information about yourself and also sign up for the news blast.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
And I want to address your second question about the winning lawsuits and the money for education. When the lawsuit was won in Nevada, for example, to stop the voucher program from going into effect there, that meant that the money that would have been diverted from the public education budget stayed in the public education. And that was especially essential in Nevada, which has very poor funding of its public schools already and was very low in the rankings on that. And needed to keep every dollar it could in the public education budget. So if that program had gone into effect, then a huge amount of money would have flowed out of the public education budget.
Thank you. You know, we have about 5 minutes left, and there's one question that I think might be important to our listeners that I hope you can answer. And that is that for our listeners here in New York and New Jersey, they might be wondering if vouchers are something that they should be worried about, right? We don't have voucher programs in those states yet. Yet I remember a few years ago, Governor Cuomo here in New York, along with the Senate, tried to put in a voucher program with disguised language around tax credits. What are some of the signs to look out for? And even in states without voucher programs, are there other ways that taxpayer dollars get funneled into private and religious schools?
Yeah, great question. There have, you know, been voucher proposals in New York and New Jersey, but they've never passed those state legislatures. And I think that's really because, as I mentioned earlier, in general, but in New York and New Jersey in particular, there's been strong public pressure against vouchers and in support of public schools, but it doesn't mean that we can all rest easy in New York and New Jersey, because we are seeing, you know, these creative ways of diverting public funds to private schools. And so I think, you know, the conditions that really result in private school voucher programs are when, you know, we're seeing systemic underfunding of public education in states, and that allows for, you know, this messaging about failing public schools, especially when coupled with high stakes accountability and schools without the resources to meet those expectations. And so I think some of the states where we've seen vouchers really be successful, it's come out of this systemic underfunding of public education systems. But one of the things that we're going to be launching on our website, it is not there yet, but is a legislative tracker that tracks voucher bills that get introduced across the country. And so I hope it will be a tool that helps identify where certain trends in voucher programs, like as we see, you know, education savings accounts and tax credit diversions, you know, pop up and are a little harder to identify sometimes. We hope that that will be a tool that folks can use to see what voucher bills are introduced in their states. But I think that's, you know, certainly something to watch for.
Right.
And I want to just quickly add that even though there aren't voucher programs in New York and New Jersey, there are significant programs that divert public resources to private schools. So in New York, for example, textbook aid to private schools or technology aid or paying for STEM teachers. In New Jersey, things like millions of dollars for school security aid to private schools. So those are still significant drains on public funding for that could go to public education.
Yeah, thanks for adding that. You know, I remember when I was a principal on Long Island, we used to do the textbooks for the private schools. And I was always amazed, you know, pretty much what they asked for, they got. And our kids had older textbooks in many, many instances. And then I'd go down to the basement and see every year brand new textbooks being ordered for the private schools. So I think the public would probably be very surprised to see how much of public dollars have been funneling to private schools and to religious schools, even in states without voucher programs. And I just wanted to add, too, thank you so much for all of that wonderful work you're going to be doing, tracking legislation. Boy, I'll tell you, you can count on the Network for Public Education and the Network for Publication Action working with you hand in hand. We'll see what you put up. We'll do those email blasts, and we'll make sure that our policymakers understand that we want public funds in public schools. Well, it looks like we're out of time. Jessica and Catherine, thank you so much. I hope our listeners visit your website and our website at www.networkforpubliceducation.org. And also, don't forget to sign up online as a BAI buddy for Talk Out of School. And thank you so much for listening in.